So, once again, the select few. I wasn't sure if we should do a lecture or just come down and play Monopoly, but I guess we'll do the lecture. I got it prepared. So, next week, in case you didn't realize it, it's spring break. Everybody who isn't here probably is on spring break. Marketing 25010, lecture 20, March 24th. Lecture notes, page 177. Have a fun and safe spring break when you get to it. Yes. Face coverings. So we've had students complaining, I guess, that some profs are not enforcing face coverings, and they're upset. So face coverings on, please. I think I mentioned this time, I know I did. If you're interested in learning more about creating accessible digital marketing for those that need it, and as a resume builder, doesn't hurt to have it on your resume, sign up for that. The Ambassador Crawford College of Business and Entrepreneurship's annual teaching and staff awards nominations are due by April 8th. If you have a staff member of the College of Business, maybe in the undergraduate program's office or the dean's office, or for that matter, in one of the department's offices that have helped you out in a special way, you can nominate them. If you have a College of Business faculty member, full-time, part-time, that's gone above and beyond in teaching, you can nominate them. So if you're interested in doing that, April 8th, either at those codes or at those links, this will be in the housekeeping slides on Canvas. We mentioned this last time as well. I guess I'll mention it a bunch of times before April 22nd. The Ready for a Business Boot Camp might be worth signing up for to seek experiences on how to get ready for internships, interviews, and lunches. Extra credit number 7 opens tomorrow, which means what? That extra credit number 6 must close today. Mini test 10 also opens tomorrow. Spring break next week. Midterm 2, the Wednesday opens. The Wednesday we come back stays open for 8 days until the Wednesday after that. So here we are on the calendar. Mini test opens on the Friday the 25th. We, for the purposes of planning, ignore the spring break, so it closes on the Tuesday after spring break on its, if you will, normal schedule. And then right after that, midterm 2 opens and closes the following week. Any questions on that scheduling? Does it make sense, sort of, how we're doing it? We're sort of maintaining the same usual schedule minus spring break week. Yeah. We know what midterm 2 looks like. We know what it's going to cover. We know how it works. We shouldn't have too many questions about that. But are there any questions on midterm 2? So it'll cover to wherever we get to today, which is the end of mini test 10. It covers mini test 6 through mini test 10, just like the original one covered 1 through 9 or whatever. Whatever it was. 1 through 5. Open notes, open books, no digital, just like 1. Enhanced Learning and Pack Back, number 7, closes tonight. Do I keep saying that right? And number 8 opens on Friday. That's just repeating the stuff. So, Skittles. We're Skittle fans. Who really liked Skittles? Just one person? Two people? Three people? Well, that's cool because I have Skittles! 1. Oh, now you like it. Where's 2? No. Who put their 2? Who was number 3? 3? Oh, now you're putting your hand up. All right, wait a second. Now he's giving out Skittles. I like them. When he was asking before, I was sleeping. What the heck? Well, wait a second. Okay, if I hit you in the face, don't sue me. Ah! Ha! Who likes Skittles all the way over there? Skittles. No one over there? All right. And where? Who are you pointing to? The lady all the way at the back. Well, you guys can share if you don't mind other people. You don't have to follow me if you don't want to. I don't know if I can get it all. Here, you take it to her or throw it to her. Ah, no can do. Bummer. This is, by the way, why I teach and don't play sports. You saw what I just did? I'm throwing it to him. I'm 12 feet short. Okay. Loge person also didn't make it to her. What's my point, other than being a little silly? Skittles says sorry for ditching lime flavor in the first place. How many people knew that they ditched the lime flavor? Oh, now you know. Okay. Well, you're right. And that's exactly what the people said. It replaced with green apple, and it sucks. Skittles is embarking on an apology tour to make amends to fans for ditching its original lime flavor in 2013. So they're working on their brand image. The Mars Wrigley candy brand announced in September that the lime flavor, introduced with the brand in 1979, would return, replacing green apple. Other flavors include orange, lemon, grape, strawberry, and both regular and sour varieties. So we are adjusting the product based on feedback from the marketplace. To promote the return, Skittles will have a billboard in Times Square beginning March 28th, and live stream an apology on Twitch a day later. A teaser for the apology, which features an actor delivering an impassioned plea for forgiveness on behalf of the brand, was shared on social media this week, so we're getting consumers' attention. We're seeing social media and marketing. Seriously. Yay? All this stuff works in the office, you understand. It's never a problem. Now we need to get sound.
Guys.
Now we need to refresh. No sound?
Guys. I'm sorry. Skittles is sorry.
Apologize the rainbow. Taste the rainbow.
I'm sorry. Right. We at Skittles apologize. I'm sorry. Skittles is sorry.
All right. So that's the dealio that they're trying to do. Obviously, what they're doing is being a little silly, as I was, getting consumers' attention. Social media and marketing. Mars Wrigley's executive said last fall that the decision to return lime to the Skittles lineup was a response to more than 130,000 mentions on social media of fans discussing lime Skittles. You people don't have enough time on your hands. You got to go discuss lime. Okay, responding to consumers, the impact of social media on marketing. It's no secret that lime has been a hot topic for Skittles fans since we replaced them with green apple back in 2013. Green apple has had a good run, but the fans have spoken, and it's time for lime to return to the rainbow, says Fernando Rodriguez, senior brand manager for Mars Wrigley. The switch back to lime will be permanent. Hoo-yah. So we have some FIFA fans. I know we got at least one other FIFA fans, just a couple, not too many. How about cryptocurrency fans or crypto.com fans? No? Anyhow, here we merge the two. Crypto.com will sponsor the 2022 FIFA World Cup. Step aside football. Crypto is coming to football. Crypto exchange, crypto.com, will be an official sponsor of this year's FIFA World Cup, which will take place in Qatar from November 21st to December 18th. It's the only cryptocurrency trading platform that will sponsor the event. So we're seeing sports event sponsorship. We're seeing exclusive rights in marketing. And, of course, this platform isn't a product. You don't buy the platform. It's a service. So we're seeing services marketing. The news comes on the heels of the NFL opening up sponsorship opportunities for blockchain-related brands, although the league is forbidding the use of the words crypto and cryptocurrency to describe the partnerships. But that's what you're partnering with. Okay. So limitations imposed by your partners. The crypto space has been heavily invested in reaching mass audiences lately, and sports offer a sizable pool of consumers from which to draw interest. So we're building awareness and interest among a large pool of people. As a sponsor of the FIFA World Cup, Crypto.com will have significant branding exposures in and outside of the tournament stadiums. It will also give its customers opportunities to attend the matches during the event and win exclusive merchandise. So we're getting brand recognition. With all this good branding exposure, we're getting a sales promotion going with this exclusive merch. Other examples of crypto investments in professional soccer include Crypto.com sponsorship of the French club Paris Saint-Germain, Blockchain Tezos sponsorship of the English club Manchester United, and Platform Voyager's digital partnership with the National Women's Soccer League. So here's obviously the importance of sports sponsorships to this particular area of marketing. Over 3.5 billion people tuned in to the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia on TV, out of home, or on a digital platform. And the final game had 1 billion viewers worldwide. If you wanted to reach a mass audience, that would be one way to do it. Catch yourself a billion viewers, right? So that's a pretty wide reach for crypto.com. Any car buffs here? Car buffs? One, two. If I was giving out a car, would there be any car buffs? Oh, now everybody's, actually, even now everybody's in a car buff. Fine. All right, so the 2023 Chevy Corvettes gets a price bump and new options. Why this particular one now? In part because it was out there, but more importantly, we're going to transition from services as part of product to price. I don't know if we'll get there today or not, but that's our next topic. So, for the 2023 model year, Chevy inflates Corvette's starting price by $1,050 to a base price of $63,195. So we're seeing the introduction of a new model, we're seeing price of the marketing mix. That's for the standard issue Stingray Coupe in its base 1LT trim. We're still waiting for the Bowtie brand to announce pricing for the 2LT and 3LT trim levels, the convertible light up, and the hotly anticipated Z06 model, which is revealed late last year and is slated to arrive early this year. So rolling out the pricing over a time period. While we wait and fantasize about uncorking the Z, how do you say that?
Z06? I think it's a
Z06. Z06's glorious flat plane crank V8. Chevy attempts to satiate us by releasing a short list of what's new for the 23 Corvette Stingray. It includes a selection of new 20-spoke wheel designs. These intricately styled rims can be held had in gloss black for $995, in satin black with a red stripe for $1,495, or in ultra-bright machine for $1,995. We will eventually talk about these companies ending their pricing in 5s, 7s, and 9s. Tech Bronze is another new color choice, but Chevy says it's a dealer-installed accessory. Another new exterior detail applies the optional performance exhaust system, which is now available with black tailpipes for an extra $200. So pricing the product options. Also new for 2023 is the $5,995 70th Anniversary Edition Package. This special edition commemorates the birth of the original C1 Corvette back in 1953. So here's product development for the fans and product pricing for those fans. It comes with an exclusive black or white paint job and unique badging, as well as red accents inside and out. The option to add racing stripes for an additional $995 more option pricing. Chevy also says that all 2023 Corvettes, even those not optioned with the anniversary package, will feature callouts to the nameplate's 70th birthday through interior plaques on the center speaker grille and the lower rear window. So, Corvette buffs, there you go. All right, we pick up with lecture notes, page 177, page 324 in the textbook, finishing chapter 12, we'll see about that, managing services, and perhaps beginning chapter 13, building the price foundation, perhaps getting ahead of myself, we will see how it goes. So we have been talking about understanding how to market services. And last time we ended up with the idea of the core service, as we had talked about, the core product. The fact is you can't have a service that doesn't do the thing it has to do at its core, but that's not what differentiates you from the competition. So we took a look at the difference between maybe Charles Schwab and E-Trade. Ancillary or extra services are those expected or optional supplements to the primary purchase. For example, craft nights with live music, a little supplement to the main thing that you're doing. Loyalty reward program, sure, I want to shop at your grocery store or at your your retail outlet, but how about a little loyalty program for me? Travel insurance from your airline, yes, the main thing is flying me safely from point A to point B, but how about some insurance? Free appointments with your personal stylist, renter's insurance from your apartment manager, or standing for something special. What does Tom sell? Shoes. And what is their special thing? They donate money to important causes. So I don't need that. Thank you. Oh, come on. Give me a break, guys. I don't really want to. There we go. So growing the good together, we're in business to improve lives. We believe in a more equitable tomorrow. That's why we invest one-third of profits for grassroots good, including cash grants and partnerships with community organizations to drive sustainable change. So we know Tom's, we know they have nice shoes, but hey, they're doing something extra that differentiates them from other clothing companies, from other shoe companies. In the B2B world, we might expect prompt delivery when we need it. We might expect favorable credit terms, more favorable than the competition. May we need responsive, 24/7 customer service for whatever it is we're buying. May we want automatic inventory management. You guys are going to watch over what I need, forecast what I need based on past experience and current demand and supply it for me so I don't have to worry about it. 401k record keeping from your outsourced payroll company. They do a little extra for you. So these things are additional things to the core of what that service is providing that differentiate you and provide more value to your consumer. So service as value. Both customers and organizational buyers want, of course, quality products, right? At the right price, they want a good value, but they also want qualified sales and service personnel, which provides value to them. They want the maximum benefits for the minimum effort. They want low wait times, which means you better be staffed up pretty well. In other words, consumers demand value from what it is you're providing. And service is often a way of providing that additional value for minimum effort, for low wait times. Returning back to our idea that we started with last time about the restaurant business and the service side of that, let's think about how the casual dining industry stopped providing value. Casual dining restaurants provide full service, alcoholic beverages, and check averages from $10 to $23 a person. Competition from fast casual chains are stealing their customers. Fast casual chains have no waiters, higher food quality than do fast food chains. So Panera, Chipotle, Panda Express, Zaxby's, Five Guys would all be examples of fast casual chains. We would argue, they would argue, a little better food than the fast food places and not quite as elaborate as these casual dining industries. So what allowed them to move ahead? They provided additional value in a variety of ways that casual dining wasn't doing. What is value? Well, value is that intangible concept often defined in terms of exceptional customer service, going above and beyond what regular folk expect, being there for the customer. How many of you guys have gone to a retail store and you can't find a salesperson? Do you love that? That's not really providing, now maybe they're offering really great prices, but there are other places that have really great customer service. See my wife. Exceptional product quality, of course, is part of good value. Value-based prices, so you get the value-priced menu at McDonald's or whatever. So these are all elements of value that are intangible. Can't taste them, touch them per se, that we want to think about. So how do we provide value to restaurant customers? Let's merge the two again. Value means different things to different people. Customers want more than just a bargain basement price. They equally demand decent portions and new exciting flavors of their restaurants. So we, on the one hand, can offer menus for value-minded customers, Taco Bell's combo meals, $5 meal boxes, and inexpensive a la carte items, McDonald's dollar menu with items priced at $1, $2, and $3, Subway with a $4.99 foot long. That's for a particular segment of the marketplace and what they value. How about healthier choices and social responsibility? McDonald's and Taco Bell have removed artificial preservatives from many items. Starbucks and others are banning plastic straws for environmental reasons. That's a thing that consumers may value that go beyond what's on your menu. Online ordering systems and self-service kiosks improve the speed of ordering and getting food. Sometimes, how many of you guys have been to a McDonald's or whatever that has a big menu, and by the time you punched it out on the board, it's taken twice as long as it would have to go up to the line? Where's the option to not have any onions? But anyhow, the theory is it's a service that consumers want. Faster payment methods, Apple Pay, smartphone apps, pay at the table technology, all provide convenience for customers. About 69% of Gen X and Y would prefer to pay through pay at the table, and 66% of boomers would prefer it. How many of you guys have run into that? You don't have to get the waiter, waitress, whatever they're called, serve person. You just pay at the table. Have you seen that yet? Yeah, convenient, easy, bada bink, bada boom, you're gone. In terms of using service to think about your competitive positioning, your service image is conveyed to the consumer by your service products. Which dimension should you be using? Well, as always, the answer is what's valuable to your consumer. There's a vast array of services you could be offering. What do your consumers want? Oh, I went a little too. So what do you think of, you won't necessarily come up with my answer, but when you think of Cheesecake Factory, what's unique about them other than cheesecake? What else is unique? The way they look, okay. I see someone in the back. Their look. Okay, I think my pop-up here was known for large portions. Okay, perhaps. What about Outback Steakhouse? Well, that's an easy one. What are they known for? There you go. Pretty good grilled steak. Yeah. And what about the Olive Garden? Yes, Italian food, but what else? Unlimited breadsticks. Okay. And also, if you will, an Italian Tuscan-like ambiance and breadsticks. Okay, so these things are differentiators, the ambiance, the large portions that consumers might look for in their casual dining. Also, some consumers would like lower prices and better food. Casual dining was initially successful because it provided better food quality than did fast food at a very reasonable price. Recently, fast food's quality has gone up, and their prices have gone up only slowly. But the casual dining restaurants' price have risen while the food quality and their innovation has pretty much stagnated. Now, going back to our little video on, Tuesday, Ruby Tuesday is upgrading its food, but its prices are still pretty high. So are they in that zone where consumers will seek them out? Improved service, there we go. You've been to a place sometime where the service was incredibly slow. It took forever to get your meal. That often happens to me when I say, hey, I want you to come see this place. It was really great. Come on and be with me. What happened today? There's no service. But that doesn't, make us really happy. Discourteous staff. Have you run into a discourteous, they have a bad day, but they're in service. My personal experience there was I went down a long time ago to, must have been a conference at The Ohio State University in Columbus. Apparently, I don't know this, but football must really be big down there. Is that right? Yeah. And so this waitress is just as mopey as she can be. And finally I said to her, what's wrong? Did someone die? I mean, what's happened? The team didn't win that day. Wait a minute. Serve me my food with a smile. Discourteous staff are not what consumers are looking for. Chili's is trying to cut 15 minutes from its 45-minute lunch by testing Blackberries that connect directly from the server to the kitchen. I've seen more of that beyond Blackberries these days. Chili's is also improving its employees' hiring practices. Remember we said hire well, train well. And the staff are wearing more professional-looking aprons to sort of give them an esprit de corps. Better looking stores, an awful lot of these casual dining stores, as we saw from the initial example, are 20 years old. Ruby Tuesday has redesigned all of its company-owned stores with contemporary designs and lighter colors. Lone Star is replacing its old concrete floor with wood and installing oak tables. Maybe you could get kid-friendly, yeah? Families are a big part of the casual dining industry's market. Could restaurants have kid playgrounds? Of course, who does? I used to before the pandemic. I haven't been back, and I don't have little kids. Have a kid playground. McDonald's, and man, we used to go to McDonald's when our kids were little, if nothing else. Of course, you had to buy food because the kids wanted to be in the playground. Could you do that? Could you do that with cats? Say, you don't see them anymore? I've seen a couple around, but not since the pandemic either. So, what about loaner handheld video games for the kids? Could you do something to provide service for that family segment? So what are consumers looking for according to this infographic in the casual dining experience? Food quality, cleanliness, yes please, service, value, menu variety, the atmosphere, craveability, reputation, and something that I would be likely to recommend. Are you able to do that with your current offering, given all of the product and the service you have to offer? And what about hotels? Let's return to that. What are people looking for in their hotels? Plush pillows and breathable bed linens. I got to say, I don't think that much about that when I go to a hotel. Soft, oversized bath towels, okay. Full-size pH-balanced toiletries. complimentary refreshments. Good luck with that in the pandemic. And a little something special. How about a plate of homemade cookies, a welcome cocktail, or fresh flowers in the room? Any of those can do the trick, depending on your segment of the marketplace. Yeah? So are you going to be the service leader? Are you going to set the service standard to differentiate yourself? Are you going to wait for competitors to set the standard and then follow their lead? Either can work. You have to determine what will work for you. For example, until recently, Apple was seen as the innovator in technology in general. More recently, Microsoft has shown leadership in a variety of technology areas. Who's the leader in any given time period? Are you going to be a leader or a follower? Now, followers can become leaders, of course, and we saw that example when we talked about the product life cycle and gave a couple examples of that. So how do we provide exceptional customer service? Well, people want to know that you care and want to know that you're willing to communicate with them. So provide multiple lines of communication in person, on the phone, by email, on a click off your website. Yeah? When there's an issue, respond. A, respond at all. B, respond quickly. C, respond thoroughly. Any of you ever had to communicate with a retailer in some way and want a response? Has that ever happened? There's an issue, a problem, deliveries? Nobody? A couple folks, sort of. All right. So you want a response. You want something to happen. Walk them out in your customer's shoes. That is to say, see what's good and bad about the service that they're receiving. Should I tell this story or not? So when my kid went to Kent State, tuition was free, but room and board was not. So we had to pay a room and board bill. You would think one thing the institution would be good at is taking money. I couldn't find a way to give them the money. I had to come down in person with the kid and go to a cashier to get them to take my money. That's not the sort of thing you want your customers to beg you to take their money. Now, I'm sure they took your money just fine. They probably improved on taking money, but they didn't for me. That's not the sort of service that you want to have happen. Walk them out and see what your customers, students, are doing, what they're getting. Ask for free feedback so you know what to improve, a little bit of exploratory research. Focus on the relationship, not on the sale. Happy customers are repeat customers. And if you show them how important you are through exceptional customer service before the sale, during the sale, after the sale, they're more likely to come back to your business again and again. You're genuine. You're authentic. They believe that you care about them because you do care about them. Yay. Exceptional customer service can differentiate you from your competitors. Service attracts and keeps customers. Services can actually help you to recover lost sales. You're doing the right thing. Service quality is related to customer satisfaction, so you have more satisfied customers. Customer service, which costs money, usually does lead to a profitable return on investment in the long term. My brother recently moved from Pittsburgh to South Carolina. And you don't take all your Pittsburgh furniture to South Carolina as you retire because that's old northern furniture. You need some nice South Carolina and stuff. So he was ordering stuff online. And from one company, it might have been, we all know Wayfair, don't we? Might have been Wayfair. He gets like four bar stools. And I think he had to put some of them together. It wasn't exactly IKEA, but something still had to be done. And one of the bar stools, the pieces wouldn't fit together. He's getting all upset about it. Fit together. So he calls him up. And they said, okay, sir, we'll send you a new one. He said, oh. Okay. He said, what do you want me to do with the old one? They said, keep it. Whoa, suddenly they recovered through good customer service what could have been a lost sale. What could have been somebody not going back to Wayfair again. Good for them. All right, let's think about how consumers purchase and evaluate services. Why? Because they're intangible. It's easy for you to evaluate that shovel we talked about, right? How do you evaluate the haircut before you get it, the medical procedure before you get it, the real estate office before they get through? How do you evaluate these things? So we talk about the purchase process thinking about search properties, experience properties, and credence properties to help us purchase and evaluate these services. So search properties are what things consumers can evaluate before they make the service purchase. So what sort of things are they? Well, if you can't judge how good the thing's going to be, it's intangible, how might you judge if it's going to be good or bad? Price. And you might think the more expensive might be better. Logical, maybe. Location. Where is this thing set up? Is it in a strip mall? Its own office building? Downtown? The appearance of the physical facilities. You ever been in a doctor's office, the waiting room that's a little grubby? Doesn't that worry at all about what else is going on? Paperwork, do they make it easy? If you've been unfortunate enough to have to go to a couple different doctor's offices, which you have to do as you get older, you find out that half the time you have to fill out the paperwork again. I just did that at the other office. Why do I have to do it all again? I went to a place one time, had the procedure, and I was having to look forward to think about the paperwork. They walked in, they had a folder, the folder had my name on it. They opened it up and they said, would you just check and make sure all this information is right? Holy mackerel! Made me feel really good about what was going to follow. Because they were all set. They seemed to know tick-tock what they're doing. Interactions with the service provider's staff. Are they polite? Are they knowledgeable? So, these are things that we can begin to judge the quality of the service before we actually have the interaction, before the service actually occurs. Experience properties. In some cases, you really can only judge the service after it happens. Was it physically comfortable for you? Can't tell that in advance. Was the staff concerned during whatever this situation was? How long did you have to wait? I keep returning, I don't think I always do this every lecture that I get, every time I give this, but I keep returning to my personal medical experiences. I had a new doctor one time. I drove all the way across the other side of Akron for some reason. The guy still hadn't come to me in an hour and 20 minutes. Needless to say, I picked my butt up, walked out, and got a different doctor. I know you're a doctor, but I'm not waiting an hour and 20 minutes for you. That's not happening. Credence properties. These are attributes inferred from a subjective evaluation of the entire process. How well did this service work for me? Yeah? So, was the medical problem diagnosed or fixed? Does the car repair work? Did it work better when I was done? Did the massage make me feel better or not? Can't judge these things until after it's all done. So, we can understand that consumers use search, experience, and credence properties to evaluate services. And things that are goods, we talk about products being goods and services, right? That are goods are high in search properties. You can judge them before you buy them. So you go to the clothing store, assuming you still go to a clothing store to buy stuff. I know a lot of you do it online. But you can see the material. You can actually try it on, check the fit. You can look at the seams. It's pretty easy to judge that. Jewelry, furniture, houses, automobiles. Then we begin to move towards things that are experience properties as well, things that you can only discern during or after the service. And so that restaurant meal, you know how good it was last time. You know how good the service was last time. How's it going to be this time? You have to experience it. Your vacation. Who's going on vacation over spring break? Okay? Not very many people. Who's working over spring break? Boo. All right. haircuts. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. You can't know until you get them. Childcare. And then high in credence properties, subjective evaluation of the entire process. Legal services. I know how much I'm paying you an hour, but did you do me right? Root canal. Auto repair. And medical diagnoses. Harder to evaluate until the whole thing is done over and you can evaluate the whole process. So what sort of service are you providing? How are your consumers going to evaluate this at what stage of the process? And is it more likely that they're going to use search properties, experience properties, or credence properties? And how do you provide value in each of these service areas? as you think about designing your service, where should you start? Well, where do we always start? The customer at the center. So, who are your target consumer and what do they want? To beat the example to death, I want a different thing in my retail shopping experience, Kohl's, than my wife does in her retail shopping experience, Saks Fifth Avenue, Nordstrom's, etc. We want different things. So you provide different levels of service. What do people want? What do people want in a fitness center? What do target consumers want? Did everybody use this example? What's one thing they want?
Safe area, good
equipment. That's actually a little bit of a segment. What might somebody who wants to be at a fitness center but doesn't want the equipment want?
Like a treadmill.
Treadmill, well, that would be part of the equipment. What else might one want?
Classes.
What is it?
Classes.
Classes. Maybe what I want is yoga, stretch. It's a fitness center. I don't care about the equipment. Maybe you have equipment, but I don't care about that, right? Different people expect different services, which may not leap to mind, from a fitness center. So, I thought I had a whole list of things. So you might have people that are there because their employer provides the benefit. They're just there because they're there. You might have people that are there for social reasons. They want to meet other people. You better have a nice area for them to hang out, a little snack bar for them. The people there that want to bulk up and look like me and Arnold. Well, like Arnold. Want the equipment, right? Then you have people that want to be healthy through stretch and through yoga. Those are different segments. They want different services that you have to provide. What is the nature of the service? That's going to be part of that design process. If it's complex, then you certainly have to have substantial support services for it, medicine, investments, and highly qualified customer contact people. On the other hand, if it's less complex, think ATMs, you need to have substantial upfront design efforts. As we talked before, the closest ATM is right here, sits out here 24/7, all seasons of the year, right there outside, and you want it to work when you go to it. I don't know how they make that work, but it required a significant amount of upfront design for that service to be available to you. So what's the nature of the service? Pricing, well, pricing can be hard for a service, right? It's not something with a strict sort of cost of creation like a product. So who's your target audience? How much do they buy? How often do they buy? Could suggest something about the price that you could charge. TGI Fridays trains their workers to offer its loyalty program of discounts and promotions for regulars that come by all the time. Why is that? They know that regulars who get this special attention come back more often. Cool, that'd be a good thing. And they know that regulars spend significantly more per average check than do people just passing through. So let's pay attention to them and give them a little extra service. What's the type of service? Will affect the pricing as well. And of course, can a fee be justified? Are people willing to pay for this thing that you might be giving away for free, but maybe they're willing to pay for it? Our past example, I think, was Timken giving away maintenance advice on expensive pieces of equipment for free, unless that's coming up, and suddenly they realize they're saving these companies tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars giving away free advice. Maybe people would pay for that maintenance advice, and indeed eventually they began to set up a separate service maintenance division and charge a fee for it. So, you have to keep in mind the costs that it takes to provide this service, cost of wages, the physical facilities that it takes to provide whatever it is you're providing. Is your gym providing expensive equipment? Is your gym providing a snack bar? Is your gym providing a pool? What are the physical facilities involved? The technology and equipment that are there? The cost of honoring your warranties and your guarantees has to be included in the pricing as well. When the service or product is complex, or the customers don't really understand this service purchase, they might need extensive sales assistance up front, either in person or maybe a clickable live 24/7 chat on your website, demonstrations, B2B often wants, because they're spending a lot of money on difficult to understand things, I want demonstrations, but maybe just on your website with a video. Service guarantees, you'll be there 24/7 or whatever the promise is. After sales assistance, pre-purchase information, and the more complex it is, the more of these things you have to plan for it and build into the price. Now, smaller marketers may need to outsource some customer services to save costs. Again, I don't think we had very many people raise their hand. Entrepreneur types? Entrepreneurs? One? One and a half? So, what are some of the pros of outsourcing some service element, like online 24/7 information? What's an advantage of that, would you imagine? Too small. Could be cheaper than you having to staff it up. And by the way, variable volume. Sometimes you need 20 people. Sometimes you need 2 people. How you handle that? Let an outsourced company do that. So it could be cheaper. Could be more easily available, etc. over time. What's a disadvantage of outsourcing anything, including your services? You lose control. They aren't your people working for you. You're trusting that third party is going to do your standards. So there are pros and cons to that, but sometimes it's necessary. So when do you use customer service outsourcing? Well, you're expecting to grow really rapidly. You're going to be focused on the growth. How about you let somebody else worry about this element of customer service? You focus on your growth, let somebody else worry about that. To save money, can be cheaper. To test and learn, how will it work if we have to respond within 24 hours to these service calls? How are we going to do that? How's it work? Let's have somebody else do it while we learn about it. You have variable volume. I just alluded to that. Sometimes you need 20 people. Sometimes you need 2 people. Maybe we just outsource it to somebody else. Your business model shifts. You've got to go global. Your customers expect you to go global. How are we going global? I don't know. My whole model has shifted. Let me outsource some of this as we go global and figure it out. Quite a long time ago, Kent outsourced its help desk services to a third party. Sometimes they're really good, sometimes they're not so good, but they've outsourced it. They save something like $1 million a year on that. How many services should you provide? As usual, the answer is it all depends. What you need to do is focus on those that make a difference in the customer's purchase decision. Don't waste your time and energy on 24/7 service if nobody ever uses it. What are you doing? Of course, you have to understand the consumer's needs, wants, and desires. Remember, customers may be willing to pay for some or all of the cost of that desired service, so you want to explore that. You want to be smart about that. That might help you determine how many services. What about full service to self-serve? Obviously, these are somewhat different segments of the marketplace. What does your market or target customer want? How many of you or your parents want to go to a real live person at the grocery store? You want them to take care of you, yeah? How many the other way around? You want to do it yourself, thank you very much. Different segments, and right now most places have both. Although what's the new thing that's coming out? Is it the app, Amazon or app, which one? Amazon, that you just have your card, you walk in, you flash your card, you pick stuff up. It tracks you as you pick stuff up. That requires some good technology. And you just walk out with whatever's in your bag or basket, and it knows, we think, what you bought, what you put back on the shelf. What is it? Well, there's always shoplifting, but you're being watched. It's not like they aren't watching you. Plus, I imagine that stuff is all RFD, radio frequency tagged, and it sort of knows it. And if you stuff it inside your coat, they just say you bought it. Congratulations, it's on your tag. So, what is it that your target consumer wants, right? What can you support is another good question. They may want it. Can you support it? If you can't, you have to decide how important it is to you. Top management commitment. Many things start at the top. Remember we talked about ethics? Ethics starts at the top. Good customer service starts at the top. You need top management commitment. You treat your employees, as we've already thought about, as internal customers because they're going to deliver your service to that consumer. So make sure they're on board with what's going on. Five lessons from All right, the five lessons from Trader Joe's. How many of you guys go to Trader Joe's? No Trader Joe's? Good service, would you say? Yeah? Five lessons from Trader Joe's unbeatable customer experience. Customer satisfaction and employee engagement. Okay? Well, you need your employees involved. If they have a happy atmosphere, then they're going to want to help the customers. Okay? So, the idea is treat employees as internal customers. View your service as a performance. Who's key to that? You probably know Walt Disney, right? They view all of their interactions as a performance. Their employees are, they don't use the word actors, do they? But cast characters, the cast. I think they're cast members, right? Why that? They're emphasizing the notion that we're doing a service performance for people. So view service as a performance. Ensure when there's a problem, you know how you're going to recover it. What are you going to do when somebody has a chair that doesn't work right? Argue with them? Charge them for it? Make them take it? What are you going to do? What's your plan? When errors occur, fix them because you have a plan for how to fix them. Know the costs of losing a customer for any reason, but certainly through bad customer service. For every customer who bothers to complain, there are something like 26 others who don't complain to you. How many of you guys have had a bad customer experience and haven't bothered to complain to the store? All right? So they don't know this is happening. They don't know there's a problem, right? But meanwhile, how many of you who had a problem with that store and didn't talk to the store told somebody else that you had the problem? Okay? Whoa, 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 this is getting out of control. I don't know you had the problem, and you're talking to 8 to 16 other people about what you didn't like about my restaurant, my movie, my massage, my doctor's office. 91% of unhappy customers will never purchase services from you again. That seems a little high, but okay. It costs you about five times more to get a new customer as it does to keep the old one. Why are they willing to give up that chair and send you a new one? Because you'll come back to Wayfair again. If you don't, you've lost that person probably for life and all their future purchases. Ouch. Five times more expensive. So it's important to think about that as you think about how you're going to recover that. Each one of your customers, by the way, when we move to social media, has an influence of 250 people or potential customers who then hear bad things about you that you don't necessarily know about. So it's not good. A true example, two Outback Steakhouse X customers haven't been back since a server and a manager argued with them publicly about how their steak was cooked. It doesn't matter whether or not it's really medium well or not. You don't argue with the customer about it in front of everybody else along with the server. Are you crazy? Sorry, sir. Sorry, ma'am. Let me take that back. So bad service results in a loss of existing loyal customers, loss of potential customers who hear bad things about you. You have the cost of gaining replacement customers, so you end up with a loss of profit, a loss of reputation, and by the way, a loss of employees due to the fact that you've created a scenario in which they don't have any esprit de corps, they don't have any morale. You're screwing the consumer over, and they're supposed to deliver it with a smile? What are you doing? What are you doing? So, how are we going to recover the situation? Well, first, as we talked about before, lines of communication, listen to the customer. Get them to talk to you rather than walk away when they're unhappy and not tell you about it, but tell everybody else. Anticipate through planning because you've walked in the customer's shoes. Anticipate the failure points. Think about what they might be. When there's a problem, act fast on it. Train your employees on what to do when there is a problem. Empower the front line to fix it. Yes, sir. I'll be happy to send you another chair. No, you don't have to send it back. I don't have to check with my manager. I got it, because we know what happens. It's fixed. Yes, sir. Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry your steak wasn't done the way you wanted it. Let me take it back. We'll fix it. Close the loop. Don't just listen to the customer. Get back to them. Have you ever had it? Has anyone ever complained to a firm, put it in, and never heard back on anything? That's not delightful. That doesn't make you feel like you're cared about. So here is one of my favorite warm and fuzzy thought leaders, Chef Ramsay, talking about a restaurant where he went in, did all the work, fixed the place back up to bring the restaurant back. Now the restaurant owners have, in the new reopening, on Mother's Day, well, you'll see what they've done.
It's great to see the dining room full and feel the buzz.
Lovely.
But on the second sitting, the overbooking's causing a problem. There are just too many people. There's a table of 19, and a table of 15, and a 14, pretty much coming at the same time. And it's not very good when you've got like 48 people all at once, because it's shouting the kitchen. Nick and Richard have to learn a cardinal rule. Put the customers first, make them feel really special, and build a sense of loyalty.
I don't expect to come out for a family meal after a wait as long as this. It's not a question of fast food, it's a question now we've been here an hour and a half. There we are, we learn, and we don't come back again, that's it.
Have you ever had a chicken carved at your table?
No.
Well, I've not done this many times either.
Kim's trying her best, but charming the customers just won't work. They want to eat. Remember, unhappy customers destroy reputations.
An excellent lesson, whether we're selling a service or selling a product. We came, we saw what you're doing, we ain't coming back. Oh, that was a nice reopening. Gee, we booked whatever the number was, 48 people at one time. You don't know how many people your kitchen can serve, that you can't serve 48 people at a time? So sure, it's great to have the employee trained, but everything else is a failure. Duh. An excellent lesson. Unhappy customers destroy reputations. Don't do that. So, want to know more? Consider marketing 45082, services marketing. So we do get through this, and we do go to the next P, the marketing mix. Yay, us. All right, so we're now in chapter 13, presumably lecture notes page 187, building the price foundation. So where are we in our framework of strategic marketing? We moved down from that 30,000-foot level to the 20,000-foot level. I told you we get to about the 10,000-foot level above your first job. So here we are working along the marketing mix. We just talked about products and services. And now we look at the next P of the marketing mix, pricing. And this is the way we show it up. So remember, the marketing mix is an integrated plan of action with the consumer as a focus, product, price, place, promotion at work. So price. So what is the importance of price? What is a price? Price is the money or other considerations a not-for-profit organization, you give your time. We'll talk for a few minutes about the odd situation of barter. But in general, the money or other considerations, including other goods and services, exchange for the ownership or use of a good or a service. We were sort of, I don't know if you were snickering at all about the cost of the new Corvette at, what, $60-some thousand? Let's talk about the Bugatti Veyron, 16.4, the base price of $1.7 million. And that's not a joke. Not only do they actually sell these cars, they're over-ordered. They can't make them fast enough. Or the 2021 Bugatti Chiron, the $2.9 million, 1,577 horsepower son of Veyron. What do you get for that? Well, let's take a quick look at what you get for that price.
The new Bugatti Chiron.
So what are the key stats? Well, 0 to 62 takes 2.5 seconds, 0 to 124 takes 6.5 seconds, and 0 to 186 miles an hour is bent over and spanked in 13.6 seconds. As for the top speed, that's 236 miles an hour in normal driving mode and 261 when you use the special speed key. The engine's quad turbo spool up sequentially in pairs from 700 rpm to 2000 rpm, where all of the Chiron's 1179 pound-foot of torque kicks in for organ-splitting acceleration. On the outside, you get the distinctive C-shape on the Chiron sides, active aerodynamics and massive cooling ducts which help feed the hypercar's 11 radiators. Inside, you'll find the finest European leather and a minimalist cabin to help make sure your attention isn't drawn away from the road at over 250 miles an hour. So what does the world's future fastest car cost, you ask? £1.9 million. And if you are serious about getting one on your driveway, you'd better be damn patient. 170 of the 500 Chirons have already been ordered, which means you'll be waiting 3 years to get your hands on one.
Well now, there's some pricing in the marketing mix for a set of consumers who really want a car. You could get from here to Pittsburgh in half an hour. Boom, you're there. 20 minutes. What is the importance of price? Think about it. The only thing in your company that generates revenue is price. Virtually every other thing you do is a cost. It's expense. Seems like price would be an important thing to think about in your marketing mix. It's the only thing generating revenue. Everything else is an expense. So let's mull this over from our basic microeconomics course, supply and demand and price points. What happens to demand if you price your product too high? What do you sell relative to what you should be selling? Your demand goes down. You're going to sell less than you should have otherwise sold. At the right price point, you price too high, you're losing profit, revenue, sales. Duh. Let's turn it around. What happens if you price too low? You're pricing lower than what you should be pricing at. What goes on then? You're losing money. You could have gotten more for what you're selling. So whether you price too high or price too low, you're losing money. Seems like price ought to be something pretty important that we think about when we think about our marketing mix. Now, your book talks about, I think it still does, I've left it in, this odd situation of barter. Barter is the exchange of goods and services for other goods and services rather than for money. Happens in two instances that I can think of. Sometimes in international global trade, you want to do some work with a country that doesn't have a lot of U.S. dollars, let's say, but they have a lot of, what might they, grain. So you say, okay, I will sell you the product you want. You give me the equivalent in grain. I'll sell the grain on some open market or domestically on a market. I'll get my cash. You have the product. So have you done barter? Or maybe I'll even use the grain. I have a reason to use it. So that's one instance. The other instance where barter could occur is in a small entrepreneurial, say, organization. You're a restaurant owner, and you would like to have your big front window washed clean. And the guy wants $200 to do it. I mean, $200 isn't a fortune, but you're a small restaurant. So you say, I tell you what, you like my restaurant, right? Yeah. But you don't eat here very often because it's expensive. Well, that's true. I tell you what, you wash my window at the cost of $200. I'll give you a voucher for a $200 meal at my restaurant. We're even. What's the advantage to that to the restaurant owner? Well, their barter cost isn't $200. Their barter cost is essentially the cost of the meal, the cost of the food, the product, which is typically 28 to 35% of the price of the meal, right? So it only costs the restaurant owner, say, about in actual product, $70, and they get a $200 window clean, and the window washer does get a $200 meal. So barter can work in either the international situations or in some unique, special small business situations would be where you would typically see this. All right, on to a little bit of formality about what is price. The price equation says that the final price that that client, customer, student pays is equal to the list price that's out there, the manufacturer suggested retail price, minus any incentives or allowances that you provide to that customer, client, student, plus any add-ons, any extra fees. That's the final price, okay? So let's think about this price equation. Price is equal to the list price minus incentives and allowances plus any extra fees. So if you buy a new car, the final price is equal to the manufacturer suggested listed price minus any rebates you get, cash discount you get, any old car trade-in you get. I keep my cars a very, 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 very long time. My trade-in is usually about $60, but I understand other people get more for their trade-in than I do. Plus any financing charges, special accessories, destination charges. A while ago, my wife bought a Toyota from the Don Joseph Toyota place down here, and it did not, this particular model, this, I think she wanted off the lot, did not have seat warmers for the wintertime. So she said, I'd like that, but can you install seat warmers? What do you expect they said? That's not what they said. They didn't say no. They said, oh, sure we can. We don't do it here, but we have a third party down here that does it, and it'll only be this much additional fee. And guess what my wife said? Yes, please. So, so these are the financing charges, the special accessory charges, the destination charges. Those come up to be the final price. Or, for a student, we don't call it the final price. We call it tuition, much more refined. What is the tuition? Well, the tuition is the published tuition, the manufacturer suggested retail price, minus any incentives and allowances. So scholarships, other financial aid, discounts for the number of courses taken. How many of you guys have discounts for the number of courses you've taken off of the list price? How many of you guys are only taking 3 credit hours? 6? 9? How many of you guys are taking 12 or more? Every one of yous are getting a discount for the number of courses you're taking. I will explain to that you that in a minute. Plus, I'll explain it to you. Plus, any special activity fees. A merchandise bought from a retailer, you have the invoice price, which is equal to the list price, minus quantity discounts, cash discounts, seasonal discounts, functional or trade discounts, plus any penalty for late payment. So let's follow up on this example where you guys aren't clear on the fact that I'm giving you a bargain for being here today. All right. So what is our manufacturer suggested retail price for 1 credit hour course? All right. So the undergraduate tuition guarantee program for 1 credit hour course is $451.05. And at that level, you pay a career services fee of $6.65, a general fee of $83.45. So your undergraduate tuition plus fees for 1 credit hour is $541.15. Okay, makes sense? You follow the logic so far? Well, for 2 credit hours, what is it? 2 times that. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. At 10 credit hours, you're paying 10 times that manufacturer suggested retail price for 1 credit hour. So there's no break, there's no price incentive up to 10 hours. And up to 10 hours, then, as you can see, you're paying $541.15 per credit hour. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you sign up for more than that, I'm going to give you a deal. So for a part-time student, a 3-credit-hour class, that's all they're taking, is $1,623.45 divided by 29 lectures that we have right now. So if you were a part-time student in my course, which I don't think you can be, you're paying $55.98 for each of my lectures. And you guys weren't here today. You're on vacation. $55.98. All right, let's move forward. At 11 hours, we charge you $5,918.15, which is a little jump. But guess what that price per credit hour now is? No longer is it $541.15. It's now $538.01. How many of you guys are taking 15 credit hours? 15? At 15 credit hours, you are only paying $397.43. Because we continue to offer you a discount on the number of, relatively speaking, on the number of courses you take. So we have quantity incentives. With these incentives, tuition stays the same. But as you continue to grow and grow and grow, the price per credit hour is less than the $541.15. And if you are taking 11 to 18 credit hours, it provides you with a discount on each of the classes taken. Yay you. So there's the quantity discount savings. Not that much at 11 credit hours. Pretty good at 18 credit hours compared to the single credit hour price that a part-time student takes. At 18 credit hours, you're saving $3,700. Now, for a 15-hour full-time student, each of my 29 classes is only $41.11. Yeah, I'll blow you off. I'll get a spring break. All right, so we do, in fact, give you a quantity discount. So let's think about a full-time in-state student at 15 credit hours with a $1,000 scholarship and the discount for the guaranteed rate. Base price, $541.15 times 15, if you will, the manufacturer suggested retail price, $8,117.25. That would be before any discounts. Now we get this minus the scholarship, minus the incentive discount for quantity of courses taken, $2,095.13, plus any special fees. So let's say you are in the College of Business. Let's say you're paying an $85 undergraduate program fee. There's an entrepreneurship majors per semester. There's a distance learning fee. So whatever applies to you, in this case, we're going to add on an $85 College of Business fee and a $36 distance learning fee. So what is your tuition? Well, it's all that arithmetic. What's it turn out to be? Boom. $5,143.12. So the price formula includes a bunch of different little things. In this case, one example carries through for you. You can see it how it might apply to other areas as well. Oh, and by the way, this is why we do have a calculator available to you in midterm two. I think it was there in midterm one, but in midterm two and in the final, it's built into the program. Don't be sitting there poking at a calculator, because that will be taken as cheating. But there's one on the screen you can use if you get one of these examples. So price is an indicator of value. Value is the ratio of the perceived benefit, go back to the understanding consumer behavior when we talked about perception, to the price that you get. So value is equal to perceived benefits divided by price. How many of you guys like pizza? I'm not giving out pizzas, but how many of you guys like pizzas? All right. How many of you guys know that you get a discount if you buy the large pizza compared to the small pizza? If you get, you get a better deal by buying one big one than by doing two small ones, right? So that would be a value pricing scheme. So in this actual example, a small 10-inch pizza, wherever this was from, is $9.19. A large 16-inch pizza is, quote, only $12.59. You get 2.5 times the pizza pie at less than twice the price. Value pricing. Now, it's helpful if we can make sure the consumers recognize they're getting a deal, help them perceive that there's a deal, but they're getting value pricing. So price cannot exceed the perceived value of what you're buying. How many of you guys have ever actually done that? You bought something and you go, that wasn't worth it. Okay. Do you then rush back and buy it again? I hope not. I spent that money. It wasn't worth it. I'll get some more, please. That's not what happens. So as a business, you have to understand what the consumer's perceived value is that they're getting for whatever it is they've spent. And you have to understand that price cannot exceed the perceived value, because people won't do it again. Value pricing, keeping in mind this idea of price as an indicator of value, is a practice of simultaneously increasing the product or the service offering or benefits while either maintaining your price or actually decreasing your price. So we have these idea of the value meals, $1, $2, $3 value pricing. McDonald's new list of burgers and other items priced at $1 and $2, $3 is aimed at creating value for customers. It looks like its real value is actually the fast food company. Why is that? Because consumers do strange things. The idea was that cheap tiered pricing, $1, $2, $3, would put more food and drinks on the list. But it also held out the hope that customers might gravitate to some of the more profitable, higher priced choices. And the strategy works. People who use the $1 or $2 or $3 menu tend to go ahead then and purchase more items than people who don't order from it. So they are providing you with a value. You like the value so much, you're willing to spend more on the value meal. So I guess your perception of value is good, and it turns out a good deal for McDonald's too. So we care about this because it brings in revenue and hence profit. So the profit equation is that profit is equal to total revenue minus total cost. And as excited as I am about that idea, how many accountants are here? Accountants? No accountants at all? Well, since we don't have any accountants here today, I think I'm going to let you go 4 minutes early because it's spring break. So we'll pick up this next time. This is the end of the material on mini test 10. And so the end of the material that will be on midterm 2. Okay. Have a wonderful, safe spring break. Enjoy, relax, work or not. Come back refreshed. And there will be class on the Tuesday after spring break. See you then.